You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 138 for the week of March 23rd, 2014. Welcome back, everybody, to the award-winning, longest-running podcast dedicated to the epic glory of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, and sometimes, and soon, what, in like 9 days? A Game of Thrones, I believe, as the time of recording this. As always,
this is Amin.
And this is Kyle. And we have with us a guest today, all the way from the UK, I believe. We've got Glenn of Vassals of Kingsgrave fame. So, how you doing, Glenn? Welcome.
Yep, I'm good. Thanks for inviting me on to this show. So it's been a long time. We've been trying to work out a date where I would be able to be a guest on the podcast, and this one finally worked out, so I'm glad.
Excellent. So we usually have a few normal questions, of course. If you've listened to us before, I'm sure you know what they are, but Amin?
Sure, yeah. How and when did you get into A Song of Ice and Fire?
I guess it would have been 2012. That's when... No, in fact, okay, so A Song of Ice and Fire, it would have been 2011. So it started about around the end of 2010. So I had finished reading The Hunger Games, and I think was visiting a bookstore in the UK, so Waterstones, looking around, browsing Waterstones, trying to see if there was any, you know, epic novels that I could read, and came across a few things. Eventually didn't see anything there, but I was looking at the Wheel of Time books, and then I was looking at The Pillars of the Earth. But then I went online later that day and just hit into Google, you know, like recommended books, epic books, like 1,000+ books.
Absolutely.
Finally found some suggestions for, well, A Game of Thrones. So looked into that on Google, on Wikipedia, to find out what that was about. Read the synopsis on Wikipedia, but I sort of thought, don't really know if I would be into that or not. So I sort of just forgot about it after that. And then suddenly, 5 months later, opened up the this magazine that comes out in the UK. It's called the TV Magazine. So it's
Jeffrey's. Whoa, what a name. Oh my gosh. How did they come up with that one?
I think it's the TV Mag. So it's available on with a newspaper each Saturday, the Sun newspaper. So anyway, I was opening that up to find out what's coming up, what movies, what TV shows that I can watch this week. And I seen some advertisement for Game of Thrones on Sky Atlantic, and I thought, where do I know that name? I know I've heard that before. Then I realised it's that book, and it had been made into a TV show, and I guess I was living under a rock because I had no idea it was being made into a TV show, even though I looked at it on Wikipedia like the past few weeks and past few months. So then I thought, okay, I'm definitely going to watch that because it was going to be on TV later that night.
Nice.
But then for some reason, I forgot to watch it. Eventually, I watched the second episode and really got into that. And I thought, you know, I really want to read these books. So I think around that time, placed an order for the first three on Amazon. Then it was sometime around July when I started reading them. So around that time, I went on holiday to Spain and read most of it during that time. Then I guess by then it was eventually by the beginning of January when I had read all four of the books, and I thought, finally I can listen to a podcast of Ice and Fire.
That was the ultimate goal all along.
Yes, I couldn't wait. I did actually, whenever I get into something, some movie or book series, I always look to see if there's any podcast on it. And I did find your podcast when I was just looking up Game of Thrones, I think, on iTunes. And I heard a sample, so I think this is a sample of episode 52. Like, ooh. The first ever thing that I heard on a podcast of Ice and Fire was something that Mimi had said about Roz being the only whore in Westeros. never. That does sound funny, but then then I realised that it did talk about the book, so I didn't want to spoil the book, so I had to read the books first, and then eventually could listen to a podcast of Ice and Fire.
Oh, I can't then believe you listened to a sample and then continued to listen to us afterwards. I'm sorry.
Or you weren't scared off by some of the reviews on there. So.
Oh, well, in fact, the first review that I did read was a scathing review.
Only the first?
Yeah, nice. The review was saying something like, oh, these guys don't know anything about what they're talking about, and Mimi rules the show, or Mimi is the only one that's organized, and but everyone else is out of place. They don't know what they're talking about. But you know, I think that's an inaccurate review, because you guys certainly do rule, and you know, you do have a good balance of each of the hosts. So I think that there is good dynamic between the hosts as well.
Thank you. I know Amin knows what he's talking about, but I really have no clue. That could be accurate about me.
And of course, I had read the first four books, and so I could only listen up to episode 61, I think. But then I had to wait until after I had read the fifth book before I could continue. So that was a killer.
So I got to ask you, what did you read in the wiki page that made you think this would not be a series that you would enjoy?
I guess it was the I can't remember what the Wikipedia page did say, but I guess I didn't really understand what the plot line was from reading the description. It was something about families at war, and I guess I didn't really pick up on what the story would be. Maybe it was a bit too complicated of a description for me to really get into, and gotcha. It just relied on word of mouth before I finally picked up the books and read it and realized what I was missing.
Yeah, this ain't too shabby. Very nice. So who is your favorite character?
The favorite character, you know, it does change each book or each reread.
I'm with that. I agree with you on that one. It's always flip-flopping around.
I think definitely the Lannister family are my favorite family of the, or favorite house of the book, of the book series. So I do, of course, enjoy Tyrion's chapters. Then up until, I guess, once we get to A Dance with Dragons, I guess I was not really, I guess, with Tyrion chapters, I wasn't really getting into those chapters, and those were a bit of a slog after a while. So it was really during A Dance with Dragons when I was reading that, I was just tearing through the book and just hoping by each chapter that I skipped. Well, after I read one chapter, I would just always hope that I would get to Cersei's chapter, but I had to go through about 700 pages until I got there. I think at the moment it's maybe, I mean, not in terms of the characters, but I guess the way that they're written, or I guess the enjoyability of the chapters. I think at the moment it's either Cersei or Sansa.
Okay, wow. Unique choices, I think, from all the people we've asked. Hmm. Nice. I'm with that. I like that we have somebody who enjoys the Sansa chapters, because I often think she gets the short end of the stick. So, cool.
Oh, yeah. I say this to Bina in one of the vessels of Kingsway podcast. I was talking about Sansa and how I think that Sansa's chapters are interesting because it has all of these interesting characters in the plotline. So it has Varys, Littlefinger, Cersei, and, you know, all the King's Landing, I guess the gossip of King's Landing as well.
Well, you just like the gossip, huh?
Oh, yeah, I love the gossip.
And you like the Sansa chapters because you don't have to pay attention to Sansa. I'm starting to understand now. No, very cool, very cool. Awesome. What other questions do we ask, Amin?
Well, just in relation to VOK, what have you been up to over there? What's your big thing?
Oh, yeah, so I guess the big thing, it's a mixture of some episodes that I release are just no one listens to them. And like, they're just the least popular episodes. Like, I did one that was a film commentary of Planet of the Apes. Then I did this one, which I did this one recently. It was a review of Ken Follett's Fall of Giants, and only about 100 people downloaded that, which actually is good. But I guess when you have episodes that are being downloaded like 1,000 times, it's not as good. But I mean, there is that. But I did start off a review of A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons. So that was like the fourth episode, and then it continued in a series. So each of the episodes we did reviews of a selection of characters and tried to organise the episodes. In total, there was about six episodes, and I organised about four of them. Then, of course, there was this one where I did do a compilation of a podcast device on fire. So sort of created a clip show of a podcast device on fire. Then at the beginning, I and a group of people discussed what we loved about a podcast device on fire and sort of gave people, I guess, now that the Game of Thrones series is coming back for the fourth series, I guess you might have a new influx of new fans coming to listen to your podcast. So
it's always nice, yeah.
If they want, they can listen to episode 22 of Vassals of Kingsgrave and get a little sample of what they're missing all the way back to, you know, the episode one of your podcast.
Very cool.
So it's sort of a greatest hits, I guess, of Podcast of Ice and Fire.
Nice. Well, Mean, you've been posting when the Vassals of Kingsgrave have a new episode. You've been posting that on the APOIF page, right?
Generally, yeah. Most of the big episodes I've been reposting there are on Twitter or on the Facebook.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yep.
Good.
That's right. I mean, we do have a Facebook page, Twitter page. I think we do have, let's see here. We have a WordPress website as well.
Nice. Now, what's the Vassals of Kingsgrave? What's the Twitter handle?
Oh, yeah. I have no idea. let's see here. I usually just type in Vassals of Kingsgrave and usually find it.
Or if you go vokpodcast.com, they actually have the .com. That'll take you to the site, and the Twitter's there.
That's right. That's right. For a long time, it was vokpodcast.wordpress.com, but now Vikram has done something, so it's now vokpodcast.com.
Gotcha. And the Twitter handle is vokpodcast.
Ah, yes.
So
I would have been my guess, but I didn't want to say something that was wrong.
The big thing that they're doing now is the reread stuff, where they actually, like, you do the voices, you know, like what we occasionally manage to do here, but they're doing it
yep,
more often.
That's right. That's right. So Duncan, that you had on a few weeks ago, episode 134, you had, he's started to organize, well, in fact, I think he's part of it, so he's done a few of them as well. So far it has been the epilogue of A Dance with Dragons, so a read through of that, and then a discussion afterwards, and then I think there was, the latest episode is one of the Jamie chapters from A Feast for Crows. So that's right. So I guess audio and narration, so an actual read of the chapter or live on the episode. And I think they are actually planning to do more with that. I haven't actually been on one of those before, but I think they have plans for at least two more now. So actual reads of the chapters live on the episodes. So of course, if anyone's interested, they can look into trying, I guess, be one of the voices of those chapter rereads.
There you go. If you want to test your voiceover chops, let's get going.
Cool. Are we, I guess, on to news in the chapter, if there's any news at all?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just looking. Game of Thrones by the Numbers. All Time Numbers has released a new visual breakdown of Game of Thrones by the Numbers, with apparently Game of Thrones has twice as many words as the Bible.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Oh. And a record-breaking amount of speaking parts. So, I don't know. There's a minute and a half video here that I don't want to watch while we're recording. Yeah. While the popularity of the television series has inspired a huge increase in the baby name Khaleesi.
Is that a joke or is that actually real?
I think that's an actual fact. And it has also inspired many, many, many pirates. And by that, I think digital download pirates.
Well, how bad is that to have that name? I mean, to have an Ice and Fire name, but one that's not even, like, correct one.
I know.
Because any of those names is a bit, it would be annoying to have.
I did hear that maybe it was sometime last year that Arya was becoming a very popular name.
Yes.
A very popular baby name.
I think so.
Ooh, I'm going to post this video. This looks very interesting.
I think with a name like Arya, it was a name before, and there are people that have it, did have that name, but like Khaleesi.
People had that name?
Yeah. It's more of a West Asian name, actually. Like,
what?
This is the root of the name, Arya. Like, there's people had that name from Asia. But
I did not know that.
Whose name was Khaleesi? Like, I don't think anyone...
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody's name is still Khaleesi. Last night. All right. Game of Thrones has premiered in Dublin.
Oh, wow.
There you go. I know they had the big New York premiere and pictures all over the place. So that was cool. And Christian Narn, I don't know if I said this last episode, the gentleman who plays Hodor, he had an interview on Winter is Coming, and he came out. He publicly came out, and I thought it was the feedback that he got from doing that was really amazing. I was reading a lot of the comments and how people were so happy and so inspired and stuff. So congratulations to him for finally getting that off his shoulders.
Is it they're worried sometimes that might still affect career negatively, like because of bias?
I mean, I'm sure. Because there's still, you know, there's still so many people who are homophobic in the world and in every industry and every facet of life that, I still think that it can be a scary thing.
Mm. There is a fear that if the actor does come out, that they would be typecasted. So the only time they would be able to work is, of course, if some gay role comes up.
Mm. Yeah. I really want to watch this statistic video. You guys stop talking. I'm going to watch this video. No. I'm going to post that, and we'll be able to talk about that.
I did see, I guess I was browsing the magazines today, and I seen the latest issue of Men's Health, and Kit Harington was on the cover of that, so maybe that's news.
Oh, there we go. Was he shirtless and working out?
No, it was, he had a wet t-shirt on.
It gets cold and wet up in the north. I mean, come on. There you go. Also, covers, since we're talking about covers, I got my Entertainment Weekly in last week, and there was the wonderful King Joffrey right on the cover, holding his little knife. Apparently, there were a lot of variant covers of it, and one of them had him standing there and Margaery behind him, like, offering him a cup of wine. And as us readers, it's like, whoa, let's not show that right away. But I guess it's to people who haven't read the books, I guess it's not much of a spoiler. It doesn't really give anything away. It's just a bride offering her husband to be a glass of wine. Hmm. Yeah. You know, have you guys been looking at these beautiful deaths? This artist has been doing deaths from a Game of Thrones. Just these pieces about all the different deaths that have been happening. And I know I posted a couple pictures of it from the Game of Thrones exhibit down in South by Southwest, but some of them are really beautiful. And I wish I knew who it was off the top of my head. If you give me a minute, I can find it. But yeah, it's some really cool work. I posted it on our page.
See if you can find the link for that, then yeah, let's take a look.
I also posted a somewhat scandalous picture of Daenerys on our page. The guys went a little gaga over that. What's that?
Was that a promo shot from Series 4?
Oh, no. It was just an artist.
An artist.
Daenerys with their left breast exposed. And the guys went a little hog wild over that one.
I think you were saying earlier that you didn't know much about the series, colleagues, but I think like you must, over the last couple of years of podcasting and discussing, you must have learned a lot. Like, this must have really affected your knowledge of the series. Like, do you find that when talking with people in your real life who've read the books and stuff, you've gone another level into the fandom?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, chatting with you guys and just learning so much, like, I felt like I had a pretty good grasp on. I joke around. I feel like I know it pretty well. But there are still things that happen every episode where I'm like, whoa, that one went way over my head. And, yeah, I've certainly learned a lot by talking to you guys and before talking to you, listening to the podcast. For example, last episode when we talked about Theon, we did a Theon chapter, and we were talking about how his men were dying at Winterfell. And Mimi's just like, you know, I didn't realize it the first time I read it that Theon was actually killing them himself or having them killed. And I was like, wait a minute, back, what? What are we talking about here? And so things like that still just don't click when I read through. And it's great. I love chatting with you guys and learning all that stuff. And I feel like I just get more and more knowledgeable every time. every episode. So the artist who I was talking about, who's doing the Beautiful Death, which you can find at Beautiful Death, single, no S, beautifuldeath.com. It's Robert M. Ball, and he's doing some really cool work over there. So you guys should definitely check that out. All right.
Try to rekindle this idea I had earlier is to always post the latest chapter picture with the chapter we're covering and to like maybe mention it just for the drawing project because they've been working hard at that. So it'd be a good way to get the promotion for them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Plus pictures. Pictures draw attention so much better.
Yeah. So with every episode release, I'm going to put the picture up as well, like with the post. So.
Excellent.
Have the artist completed A Storm of Swords, the Storm of Swords drawing project? I haven't kept up to date with that.
It's the longest running drawing project of ours so far.
Oh, yeah. Just if they had gone on.
I think they're pretty close to finishing it, actually. And I have to do a chapter. I've saved one of the chapters for myself. So at some point, I need to go do it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But they're getting close. I think they're in the last 10, probably.
My God, these pictures are beautiful. I want to order some. I'm pretty sure you can order them, and I want to.
Oh, did you post the link here? Yeah, let's take a look. Beautifuldeath.com.
It's Game of Thrones, not A Song of Ice and Fire. So keep that in mind.
Well, that's a good way of marketing it, right? To get the most sales. This is up to season 3, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's releasing, as you can see, the dots on the bottom of the screen. This must be so interesting for those just listening. But the dots on the bottom, you can see how many more there are going to be. So check back tomorrow for another one. He's releasing one every day.
Yeah, I do like this style. I do like this
up until the release of, or up until the premiere of season 4, I believe. So
speaking of marketing as Game of Thrones, I was looking at a shelf of books today, so in a local supermarket, and I had seen new book covers for the books come out in the UK, possibly the UK, but so they were marketed as, I think, Game of Thrones 4, : A Feast for Crows, and then I think I've seen A Storm of Swords as well, part 1, and then A Storm of Swords part 2 as well.
Yeah, these are the new covers. They're sort of, are they real photos? Or they look almost like real photos, right?
That's right, yeah. So it's sort of the, sort of like the Harry Potter adult book covers.
Mm. Is that the one where Clash of Kings is the desert picture?
Let's see, I think the, I can't remember now if I've seen a Clash of Kings or not in the bookstore.
Okay. I think I know which ones you're talking about, and I think I've posted them in there. I think they're beautiful, if we're talking about the same thing. Really neat covers. Which I had a picture. Yes. But let's talk about, since we're talking about marketing here, let me ask you guys about this. When you're talking to people and you're, specifically, if you're like talking about the podcast or whatnot, and you're trying to get people to listen or whatnot, do you say, oh, it's a podcast about Game of Thrones?
Not if I'm talking about the podcast. If I'm talking about like the series in general, I'll usually start with the term Game of Thrones because it's more broad in terms of understanding. But if they've read the books, then I switch to Song of Ice and Fire.
Okay. But if you have to do like that test, you have to do that kind of litmus test thing first before you know if you can say it or not, huh?
Yeah, start with Game of Thrones. If I meet a nice girl at a party, I say Game of Thrones. I don't say like Song of Ice and Fire because less of a crash and burn chance.
No, you should totally just do a Song of Ice and Fire because then if she knows what you're talking about, you don't let her
know. No, if she knows enough of a Game of Thrones, it's good enough. That's got potential.
Good
it's
enough.
Like it's like if she's like just got into the show and you've got all this book knowledge, it's like, you know, taking candy from a baby, basically, right?
Yeah. But I run into this problem quite a bit. I mean, I go to a lot of conventions and I have business cards for the podcast and whatnot, and people are and the geeky award stuff, and it was everybody's kind of like, oh, what do you do, or what are you here for, or you're here as press, like what are you here for? And I'm like, oh, I do a podcast of Ice and Fire. Oh, what's that about? And there's always this like second or two where I just go, do I say just A Song of Ice and Fire? And then I know they'll kind of look at me with a confused look at their face, which happens 9 times out of 10. Mm. Or do I say Game of Thrones? And then I go, oh, but we're not really about Game of Thrones. Or does it even matter? Should I even care? I'm just...
asking you about the podcast, you could say A Song of Ice and Fire, the source material for Game of Thrones. Then you're educating them at the same time.
Mm. But it also comes up when I'm like tweeting and I'm posting on our Facebook, whatnot, because the hashtag Game of Thrones is much more popular than the hashtag ASOIAF. Hmm. And so when I'm, you know, I want new listeners to find us through our social media and whatnot. So I end up using Game of Thrones more frequently. But I feel deep in my stomach, I feel like I'm betraying the podcast. I don't know. It's kind of a weird place where you just don't. You want to stay true to the source, but at the same time, you want to reach a wider audience. And I guess it shouldn't keep me up at night as much as it does.
I remember going to a job interview, and so I had that moment of just the what is your interest and you know in your spare time. So that was the question, the interview question, and I started talking about reading books, and you know I was about to talk about A Song of Ice and Fire, but then I thought, would he get A Song of Ice and Fire? So I started saying, A Song of Ice and Fire, that the book series based, well, no, you may have seen Game of Thrones, it's based on this book series, but then turns out the interviewer actually did read the books, so I was, you know, describing something that he already knew, so I felt sort of silly then.
Nice. Did you get the job?
No. Unfortunately. No, I did think that would give me an advantage, like, you know, we connect, we read the same books, you know, we can have something to talk about.
That's why he didn't hire you. He's like, you're reading these books, it's not appropriate for this business.
Yeah, you probably know more. I do.
Well, depending on the job, it's not the best thing to say, I think, Game of Thrones. Like, it depends on what kind of job you're going for.
That's right, yep.
Well, yes, if you're trying to be a lawyer or something, you know, maybe you shouldn't.
The more conservative it is, the more likely. Although they probably, everyone still watches it, but yeah. Officially.
If you're running for president.
Well, I think Obama says he does watch Game of Thrones. He's already a president, though. He can't be elected again, so he's like.
He's like, King Joffrey is my favorite character.
I think it's popular with actually quite a few world leaders. I think an Australian prime minister has watched it.
Oh, nice.
Some others.
Nice.
But then you're like, read the books. Don't just watch the
read the books. Glenn, your story reminds me of that time I went to an audition, and the guy auditioning me actually stopped me after the audition, pulled me aside, and was like, hey, I'm actually a big fan of the podcast. And I was like, oh, really? And then I didn't get the part. It's like, damn it, almost. He must have been that guy who put the bad review up on iTunes.
Well, he said he was a fan, though, so that is, I guess it just wasn't quite enough to. So. He was afraid of showing favoritism. He was like, it was because he liked you, he couldn't hire you.
Couldn't do it, bastard.
But you know, since then, sometimes I do go onto the iTunes page for your podcast and try and look at the reviews. Most of the time I do see some really good reviews. It's been a long time since I've seen a bad review of your podcast.
Because we bribe people.
No. It's fair enough. People don't like the podcast. They can put a bad review. And sometimes, like, there's truth in it. Like, I think they wanted, somebody mentioned they listened, like, the first episode, we were, like, congratulating ourselves for getting that geeky award. And if you just jumped in and that was your first episode, then we sound like a bunch of, like, self-congratulating.
Big old circle jerk.
Yeah, which we do. But if that's your first episode, you don't understand like the effort and the time that they got to get to that point. So it just, we in some ways we do become very niche and we have all these references and that sort of stuff. But you know, like we just got to do what we do. We are what we are, and I'm happy with the community we have that is growing at a good rate. But we don't have to get every single person on the bandwagon.
House Man Woody's the best damn group of people out there. Yeah, that's what I say.
It's like, what other podcasts have listeners who meet up and have groups and stuff, like at least in Ice and Fire, you know, like have their own meetup, things like that. So it's just because everyone's just here and we're having a good chat.
Hear, hear. Speaking of good chats, gents, should we get to the chapter?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So, Glenn, we've been asking our guests lately if they want to do the recap or not. Sometimes we force them. Any interest?
Oh, yeah. So I did think that I would try and be prepared. So,
shit. It's been okay, I'm down with this.
So yes. It has been a long time since I've read the books, maybe about 6 months since I've read any of the chapters and any of the books, but whipped out my Robert Jordan approved Clash of Kings copy and read.
This must be your chapter. I mean, it's got Cersei and Sansa in it.
That's right, exactly. So I've tried to prepare something. So
all right, let us have it.
That's right. So I read the chapter yesterday, then tried to write a description in the past hour. So okay, so here it goes. So this chapter is Santa 6, aka Chapter 1. Sorry, Chapter 61. Already screwed up. Of A Clash of Kings.
That's fired. You're done. Get out of here. No.
As King's Landing is under attack from Stannis Baratheon's fleet, the ladies of the court, upon Cersei's invitation, are barricaded within the Queen's ballroom for protection. So Cersei hosts the party, and Dontos and Moonboy provide the entertainment. Cersei and Sansa have a typical All About Eve type moment, so this popular trope among movies such as The Devil Wears Prada and Gosford Park, where the ingenue and the veteran have this one-to-one, so basically just like a we're not that different, you and I type moment. Cersei advises Sansa to stop being naive and use the weapon between her legs to overcome obstacles and objections, and tell Sansa of some of the horrors that will befall mostly the small folk and the guests within the ballroom should the castle fall. During the chapter, Osni and Osred Kettleblack visit the ballroom to provide Cersei with updates on the battle. During the chapter, Cersei learns that the capture of a groom and two maidservants that attempted escape from the castle with free horses. Cersei commands that Cerulean Payne attend to the free servants. During the chapter also, Cersei becomes more drunk and laments the fact that Jaime was allowed to learn war tactics, swordplay, and he was named heir to Casterly Rock while she was trained in manners, etiquette, sewing, and then was passed over to a husband that would beat her and then have a younger replacement ready once she passed her sell-by date. As Osni delivers the final report that Tyrion has led a sortie out the King's Gate, Cersei demands that Osni return Joffrey to the castle. After many of the guests go to the Sept and pray, Cersei and Sansa continue their All About Eve moment, and Cersei announces her plans should the castle fall. That plan that Ser Ellen Payne is present to execute Cersei, Sansa, and the guests of the party to protect them from rape and torture. And that's what I had for the chapter.
Very nice. Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
Is this a unique thing Cersei's doing? Does this often happen where ladies will put themselves in a room and kill themselves if their castle gets taken over? This is pretty Cersei unique, I think, right?
Well, she's certainly very, very vindictive. Like, she's going to take Sansa down with her.
You think that's what it is? You think it's just to get at Sansa?
Oh, no, I mean, like, just adding Sansa in is very vindictive. I mean, her herself, she doesn't want to be taken alive by Stannis. She doesn't want to be judged by him, as she says.
Her closing line in the chapter is just, House Stark will not benefit from the fall of House Lannister. So I guess there is some bitterness there as well to involve Sansa within the party.
Ends up going the other way. House Lannister doesn't benefit that much from the fall of House Stark.
Interesting.
But I think you're right. I mean, one thing that she mentions here is what we chatted about in the last episode, which actually isn't out yet, but it will be out soon. Is what was going to happen there? Is if they hold out long enough, then Stannis can come and they can surrender to him, and the people will be spared. But if it's taken right away by a bunch of like bloodthirsty men before Stannis comes in to calm them, then they could be in trouble.
Yeah. Very much so. And Cersei is so just out there. And I mean, she's getting a bit wasted in this chapter. And so all of the defense, she just doesn't give a shit anymore. And she just kind of lets it out. And it's such a, I don't know. I see this happen to people that I know where, you know, when everything's going well, she's, everything is yes, and she's so on top of it. And then as soon as like things don't start to not go her way, it's just like whatever, it's not worth it anymore. It's just through and done, and I might as well just kill myself. And she's such a like a drama queen.
Well, you can see her bitterness. You can see it multiple times in this chapter above not being a man or not having like the same rights as a man. She's always like we're stuck with like tears as a stupid weapon. And like the gods wasted manhood on that guy. So, and also like the reflection of, I guess, because she wanted to be like Tywin and she couldn't. She wanted to be like Jaime and she couldn't. Even though she has the same idea, like we should have them fear us rather than love us. And then Sansa's like, in Sansa's mind, she's like thinks love is more effective. But.
Cersei wishes so bad she was born a Targaryen. I don't think she ever says that, but it always feels like that to me. Because
I think it's just like her eyes are like wildfire in this chapter. Eyes of wildfire.
Well, she has green eyes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she just gets more radiant the drunker she gets, which I also know women like that.
But like, yeah. What do you think about her, Glenn, in this chapter?
Oh yeah, during the chapter, I guess there is a bitterness that Cersei has, I guess, to the guests, and she's just, I guess, scared for Joffrey. She's scared for her children. She's just, I guess, scared for herself. So she's drinking more and more to, you know, mask her feelings. And then, of course, she is taking it out on Sansa. So she's in a way, she's acting with glee, so she's almost laughing at the fact that all the small folk will be tortured, and I guess she does say that she'll be the guests of the ballroom will be protected by Sir Ellen Payne, but then there is, of course, and oh yeah, so she will be protected by Sir Ellen Payne. So once he executes the guests of the party, should the castle fall, but I guess during the chapter. She's doing all these things that I guess she's too afraid. Well, she is afraid, but she doesn't want to say that. So she's just making fun of the guests, or she's saying things like, oh, the small folk will be tortured. So that was my thoughts about Cersei during the chapter when I was reading it.
Hmm. And she's worried about Joffrey the whole time as well.
Yeah.
And that's it seems right. to be one of her only concerns is him.
But she pulls him out of battle a bit early, which hurts the morale of the men.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought they did this very well in the TV show, the mistake of pulling him back and how Cersei screwed up there. So I thought they handled that very well.
Mm. That's right. From the TV show, you could see the tide was turning with the men. So you could hear them, you know, talking amongst themselves when they seen that Joffrey was leaving. So that was a good effect that they had in the show.
Gotcha. I don't remember that very much from the show. I remember her sitting in the room with Tommen.
She like jabs Lancel in his like wound and stuff. It's like that was still my favorite episode of the show. It's the Battle of the Blackwater. Mm. All the episodes is probably my favorite one.
Interesting. Gotcha.
Let's see what else we got here. There's a lot of people that Cersei like. A lot of her toadies like Ser Boris Blount, Giles, Ser Giles, and Pycelle. Like they were all taken by Tyrion and he releases them, but they're all useless. But they keep them around anyways because they're at least they're Lannister. Toadies.
Mm. And you got the Kettle Blacks too, who show up in this one. And I love how George does this in the books, where Cersei hears some people talking, and they're like, "Oh, one of the Kettle Blacks, Osni, I believe, is like, oh, he's just like the Hound, just as good a warrior, just younger and more handsome or whatever." And in my head, I'm like, "No way."
Yeah.
But that's what George does. I mean, you read it and you're like, really? And then you're like, oh, wait, no, she's just hearing people talk and people just gossip about anything and they say anything. And that's how it is in the real world. It's like people will just say whatever they want to say just to be heard and just to make gossip and whatnot. And that's what you got to take it for.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, like, if Ashley was here, she'd be pissed to hear that. I mean, the Kettle Blacks are, we all think that they're probably decent warriors because just being sellswords, you have to be to survive. So they're not bad, but to be Hound level is pretty high.
Hound level. Can we go over the Kettle Blacks? Because I swear to God, I've read this book so many times and I always forget where they come from. When do they show up? What's going on? Who hires them? They're Cersei, right? Cersei brings them in.
Isn't their dad and sort of the hat? Doesn't their dad have...
There's a multiple level of deception. I mean, like, Cersei starts hiring her own sellswords to counterbalance Tyrion. So she thinks that they're theirs, and then Tyrion thinks that he's bought them out. But in reality, their father is working with Littlefinger, so he's the ultimate control on them.
Really?
Yeah.
See, here's the things I'm learning. That. The Kettle Blacks. Okay.
But the other thing is, even Littlefinger mentions that they start to... They're starting to slip from his control because one of them gets the white cloak, and also Cersei is sleeping with the other one. So like they're not fully under his control, but it is one of the big reveals, I think, of the Storm of Swords, where we find out like the father. I think Sansa meets him. Is like, he looks familiar. It's like, yeah, this is the father of all the Kettle Blacks. So they're all ultimately, at least at the start, working for Littlefinger.
They just seem like. To me, they were when I've been reading the books, they're always kind of there in King's Landing.
Yeah,
but they never really do anything worth note. they're just kind of there. They're just like two thugs. Might as well be left and right to me. Because do they do anything significant? I feel like they don't have any big moments where you're like, all right, I really need to figure out who these guys are.
I always
are.
Mix up their names, too. I'm looking at the Wikipedia now to be safe. So Oswell is the father. He's a man at arms service to Lord Peter Baelish. And then he has three sons. Osmond Kettleback, who's a member of the King's Guard, the eldest son.
But not at this point in this, not in,
oh, no.
by this chapter.
Like if what happens to the event. Yeah, right. This is like they're getting importance. They're slowly being described because it's like,
okay.
Shows that they're not only do they get along okay with like the lords, but also the small folk and like the servants.
Well, the ladies like them, right?
Yeah. They got
scars.
They're
like manly
now.
Men.
I think it's, is it Osney that confesses that he bedded Marjorie?
Osney is the sworn sword of Queen Cersei. Osfrid is the middle son, who is the commander of the city's watch. But they all get screwed over by the end, I think.
Does one of them get captured and tortured?
Yeah. But one of them goes in and like pretends that like he confesses. Is it Osney? Let's see. The guy who has the scar.
I think it's Osney.
Yeah, he gets the scars on his cheek, right, yeah.
I just like how their sigil is almost like a black on red Green Lantern symbol.
Well, yeah, Osney goes in to like confess was sleeping with the queen, and then the faith guy's like, I've never had somebody seem so happy about confessing for a crime. So they, so they tortured him, and then he came and told them the actual truth. So he didn't act it very well. He should have.
Sir Osmond, Sir Osney, and Sir Offred. Oh my God, there's three of them.
If they end up in the show,
I think they were just.
If they're in the show, they're going to change the names. Here's a guarantee. If they do end up in the show, they're not going to have these three names.
Okay, but they haven't showed up in the show yet.
They're going to be Sir A, Sir B, and Sir C. Those like
It's going to be Mo, Larry, and Curly Kettleblack.
No, they haven't been in the show at least officially. I don't even think they're even there in the background.
Okay, so Osney and Offred aren't even knights at this point.
Yeah,
because they're uninvolved in the fighting, but they receive knighthoods after the Battle of the Blackwater, so they're not knights yet.
Yeah, Osmond claimed to have been knighted by Sir Robert Stone, which is
sounds legit.
It's just such a fake name, Robert Stone.
That's a
bastard name. Yeah, jeez. He's like, who are you knighted by? He's like Sir Robert Stone. That's like how he answers it. So,
okay.
But when that did happen, when I did read that in the book, it sounded like he had made that name up.
Oh, yeah. That's the way he says it, too. Yeah.
Wait, who made what name up? Oh, he just made up the knight's name that named him. Okay,
yeah.
That knighted him. Gotcha. Oh, damn Kettleblacks. And why did I think there were only two of them? There's three of them.
There's three of them, yeah. And I think not all of them have, but she confesses to all three just to be safe in case they do.
I thought that it was Osney and Osfrid both slept with her, but it was Osney that... So she used to...
I'm sure that all three haven't, because she says she overconfessed. So it wasn't all three, anyways.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wait, who was knighted by Robert Stone?
The wiki says Sir Osmond claimed to be knighted by Sir Robert Stone.
Okay. Because I'm just reading here that Kevin Lannister, he imprisons Osford, and he plans to send Osford and Osney to the wall, or have them face Sir Robert Strong in trial by combat.
Basically get cut down for that up.
Okay.
Yeah, so they all fall at the end. Like he was in command of the city watch, goes down. They're all in trouble.
Okay.
But I do remember like the guy in the Kingsguard, Osmond, I guess, like Littlefinger I think mentions that like he's not being as receptive, a white cloak does something even to somebody like that. So I found that pretty interesting.
Mm.
That can affect them.
So did Osney and Marjorie Tyrell actually sleep together?
I don't think they ever quite got there. I think he was complaining, right?
He was complaining.
He's like, she's always like scars, but like there's always like 50 people around. So
gotcha.
That whole shenanigans, like the whole trial stuff at King's Landing, was one of my favorite parts of the latest books. I'm looking forward to see what happens over there.
The Septon just torturing everyone and figuring out what's going on.
Just the ridiculousness of the claims. They're like the Blue Bard and like this old Hamish the Harper and Jalibert Joe has been sleeping with Marjorie. Like all these like stupid claims. It's like it's so over the top, ridiculous. Like
Marjorie, that's what? Oh man, yeah. So Cersei wants Osney to tell them he seduced Marjorie. And then when they capture him and torture him, he goes, no, I didn't actually sleep with Marjorie. I slept with Cersei.
Yeah.
Oh, what a bastard. The Kettleblacks.
You know what's... I mean, this is all not in this chapter, but we're chatting about it. What's interesting is when they talk about... Like, the Faith is willing to torture people, but they torture... Like, Qyburn tortures the Blue Bard, and then he sticks to the tail. Because, like, even the Faith can't be as, like, cruel as Qyburn. Like, he's far more skilled to torture that he's broken the blue bard. Like, the faith stuff is like nothing to the blue bard. It's just like so ridiculous. Mm. What's going on over there?
Qyburn is just a masochist, yeah. So he just enjoys it too much. A sadist, excuse me.
That's debatable. We don't know if he's just purely objective doing it, or if he actually gets some enjoyment from it.
That's true. Yeah. It's true.
It's hard to tell.
It's just for science.
All right. So what else we got here? They have. There is one line that makes me think that Cersei might have been aware that Renly was planning to bring Margaery in to replace her, because she's talking about being replaced by a younger filly. So I wonder if she became aware of that plan. That's what she was referencing. The plan that never happened, but it was.
She does know that. She did say something to Tyrion earlier in the chapter, earlier in the book, I think.
That they were planning to bring Margaery in?
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
So that's what she's referring to here, I guess.
What does she say? What's the line, or...
Well, in this chapter, it says that she's being like used like a horse before being put away for a younger filly. But I think earlier on she mentions like when she's saying like everything was going to shit, and then like Renly was planning to bring Margaery in, blah blah blah.
Okay.
The original plan was to replace her with Margaery, which would have worked pretty well, I think, actually, for Renly.
So you think the younger filly line is specific towards Margaery? I just kind of took it as like all men, you know, they'll sleep with their wives, and then once they get older, it's like, oh, where's the younger girl? Like,
I think she's applying it to that as well. I think it's a multiple, like, it applies to that. It could apply to the prophecy of the younger queen coming. It could apply to all three of them. Mm. It probably is meant to.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have the moment where she finds out that Tyrion is going to be leading the sortie, and she's like, well, game's over now.
If Tyrion...
Let's all get drunk and get ready to die. Ugh, so.
Yeah.
What would you guys think if you got word, if you were like holed up in the castle somewhere and you got word that Tyrion was now leading the battle? He was taking out a sortie head on, attacking the enemy. What would you think?
Well, basically what she said, that he must be desperate.
Yeah, because he's not known to be a good warrior. We know that. I mean, he might be able to barrel roll and flip over them.
I was kind of wishing that Tyrion had taken Joffrey with him. Maybe Joffrey would have fallen in battle.
Yeah.
But I guess that was part of the deal for Leia to be safe, is to make sure Joffrey survives the battle.
Have that. So he protects him. He sends him off. He does a thing. Do they mention the Hound in this chapter? I can't recall.
They mentioned him, like, he was killing archers or something, but I don't think they mentioned, like, that he had left. They just say that Tyrion taken over, so maybe that's kind of assumed that he left or died.
Right.
But
yeah.
Well, I mean, in the next episode, because we're going to cover the other two chapters that are immediately before this, they all kind of overlap. They're just like, what's going on? So this whole like last string of episodes is the Battle of the Blackwater. It's all chaotic. Yeah.
A lot of these kind of overlap. They kind of happen very like feast and dance, where they're at the same time. Hmm.
All right. I thought you guys had did these chapters in order of...
No, sometimes an episode or two will be like switched around just because of recording order and stuff. Yeah, but that actually works because of this overlap anyways. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Dun, dun, dun. So this Sansa chapter, Sansa doesn't seem to do much. Wow, that wasn't even English. I apologize for that terrible sentence I just tried to string together.
It's like 6 pages long, I think.
Yeah, it's not that long.
This is very much a Sansa chapter where it's all about everybody else. And she's just observing, pretty much. I mean, it does have to do with her, obviously. She's in this predicament. She finds out in this predicament where Cersei's going to have her killed and everything if they get stormed. But it's very much kind of much more of a Cersei chapter in the way where we see what she's doing and she's up to and her getting the words and how she reacts and kind of all of her actions. So...
But she has to hide, like, when Cersei says she's going to the Godswood, she worries that she's found out about Dantos, but she hasn't. But she manages to hide that.
Yeah, what is the secret she's discovered? That she doesn't actually root for Joffrey?
Yeah, basically she's been going to the Godwoods all the time, so Cersei just assumes that she's been praying for their downfall.
So that's the big secret that Cersei thinks. She's like, I know your secret in the Godswood. You're praying for your brother. Whoa, big surprise. Wow, quite a secret, Cersei.
Yeah.
I think anybody with half a brain could have guessed that one. But there you have it. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much it. I think that's all I have for this one. Is that what we all have?
Yeah. Anything else, Glenn?
No, well, that was the only notes that I had. Yeah. Is that I guess the chapter doesn't have very much happen. I mean, there is the two maidservants and the groom, but there's nothing much to say about that. I guess you just hear about a few events, and then you hear about guests being sick and going off to pray during the chapter. Not a lot happens, I guess.
The artwork for it in the drawing project pretty much sums it up. Like, if you've seen the link, it has everybody in there. It has the hens, basically, which they refer to as well. The hens and their cocks in the show. Right? We have Danto's there. And then Shay is there as well, actually. Cersei mentions Shay, but she doesn't know it's Shay. She's just like, all that serving wench.
Oh, she says something like that serving wench would have a hell of a time with the army, so the army would make meant meet of her or something like that.
Oh, there's Moon Boy here in this picture, too. He's walking around in stilts.
Nice. Do we know who drew it?
I think it was Jessica that drew this.
Okay.
Yeah, Jessica 309.
There we go. Mm-hmm. She asked on her Facebook if we liked her paint project pictures.
I think her Blackwater one is a good one, but we'll mention that in a few hours. So
here we go.
Okay, I guess we can wrap up then.
So wait, I got one more question.
Oh, sure.
The folks who ran away, what was it again, Glenn? What were there? Who
was
there?
So there was a groom and two maidservants that tried to escape from the castle with three horses.
Does that have any significance? Do we know who those people are, or is it just random?
I think it seems random, so no explanation, just two maidservants that worked in King's Landing and, of course, a groom, and they tried to escape with three of the horses, but then eventually they were captured, so Cersei just says, have Sarah then, well, behead him, but Cersei says something like the betrayal of war or something like that, so the first of the betrayal starts here.
Yeah, what she said is in reaction to that is like you have to make people fear you more than the enemy, which is true in the middle of that battle, but maybe not as effective in the long term as a strategy.
Yeah, it really worked for Theon.
So in the battle it works, but in the long term, if you look at like Eddard versus Tywin in the last two books, Eddard is the one that had far like more enduring loyalty from his men. So.
That.
And then finally I guess so Illyn Payne is the one who chops them down, those three people, and he comes and he doesn't even bother like wipe the sword, it's like dripping blood.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yep. Just because dripping.
He enters the ballroom and Sansa mentions that there is blood dripping off his sword, which is of course Ice, her father's sword.
Blood from Ice. Dun, dun, dun. Something symbolic right there. Nice.
So are all of the hosts, so Kyle, are you going to draw a picture for the drawing project?
Well, I have. I haven't done one in a while, though, but I was certainly involved in the first book, and I can't remember if I had any in the second one. But yes, I have drawn some pictures. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he has. Although we were hoping to maybe for this for the third book, all of us have one in there, if we can fit one in.
Okay. Yeah, just send me a link. I'll draw something. But I did like Ned in the black cell with Varys. And I did the shadow baby being born.
Oh, that was a great picture.
And why, thank you. So I've done a few.
The first two books are available on iPad as well for people who have that. So.
I had all the Where the Bitch Is At, I think, was my very first one with King Robert. And I broke the rules, my very first drawing, so don't go look at that one. Yeah, but absolutely. Maybe I'll draw another one. I don't know who would want to be subjected to that sort of torture, but suppose I could. Yeah, stuff. All right, that's it for that chapter, guys.
Good.
Anything else we need to talk about? Any news or anything? Glenn, Amin, any last-minute updates?
Nope. If we remember, we'll add it to the next episode.
All right. There we go. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Glenn. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Yes, you're welcome. I'm glad. So it's almost like a dream come true, finally getting to be on the podcast. So
Then you're going to wake up and it was all a dream.
It's all a dream. So yeah, thank you so much. Please continue all the great work you're doing at over at Vassals of Kingsgrave. You guys are kicking butt over there. And for our listeners, make sure you guys keep up. What am I trying to say?
Oh, the T-shirt. I think you're telling them about the T-shirt contest, right?
T-shirt contest. Yes, I mean, why don't you tell us about the T-shirt contest?
Well, if you are in the U.S., then you, if you post a comment in one of their episodes before season four starts, one of the episodes from the let's just say the last month, I'll take a look at them. You could win a T-shirt, a Game of Thrones T-shirt. So
there we go. Yeah.
Why is it that it's only for the US?
Because that's as far as they're willing to ship it.
Oh, right, okay. So. That's understandable, I guess.
Yeah. Well, if this goes well, maybe we can find somebody who'll donate one in the UK and elsewhere and do those T-shirt contests. Nice. But I figured at least some people getting it is better than none. So.
So Glenn,
that's right, you must have a lot of fans from the US, so maybe that's like a good bulk of the people that listen to the podcast.
We have a good chunk from Europe. I think it's 25%. Is it from Europe? Which is pretty high.
Oh, right. 25%.
About that. Yeah.
We've got like two in Antarctica.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. I wish it was. That's, we're trying to hit every continent. Yes, so thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you keep up with us. Follow us on Twitter at APOIAF, on Facebook, on our forums. Make sure you keep in touch, share, chat. Keep up with us, guys. So thank you so much for listening. Until next time, have a good one.
See you next time.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Glenn.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
It was a lot of fun. Fun, good times. The Battle of the Blackwater is underway. Very nice. Cool. All
right.
Trisha, I've met her, and so I don't think she's... I think she's, like, she's... She hasn't finished all five books yet.
Okay, we'll have to make sure we know so we don't spoil.
Yeah, actually, I'm definitely going to ask her where she is in the books or whatnot. But yeah, we're just going to do the normal thing. We'll do news. We'll get to know her. And she should be very – she'll probably be awfully vocal because she's a host and stuff.
Cool.
So she'll chime in and whatnot, and I'll ask her some stuff. And cool.
Excellent. I mean, the two chapters look like they're fun. All right, I'll see you in a few hours then.
All right, man. I'll see you. Wait. Meme, before you go, did she add you?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see. I think I see her online. I mean, you can pull her in when we actually do it, though, right?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good. Cheers.
Just checking. All right, awesome. See you.